It's Thursday, May 5, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Around the world, the chatter continues to be about the death of Osama bin Laden. And wouldn't you know, some of the most predictable events that you could expect, well, they're taking place. For instance, the Wall Street Journal, major headline, Conspiracy Theories on Death Start to Spin. Yaroslav Tipomov says, across the Muslim world, the killing of Osama bin Laden has unleashed a swirl of conspiracy theories, with many Pakistanis, Afghans, and Arabs refusing to believe U.S. assurances that al-Qaeda's founder is actually dead. Well, when you read the story, it becomes less credible that they actually don't believe it, and more credible that they have to say that they don't believe it. The reality is, of course, that if Osama bin Laden were alive, we would almost certainly know it by now, and no American administration is going to put its credibility on the line for something like this until and unless there were that DNA evidence that was produced that the body was indeed that of Osama bin Laden. The reality is that the people around the world who are involved in this chatter are responding out of their own worldview and out of their own social and political context. And that's especially true in the Arab world, where there is one huge word that has to mark their feelings and disposition at the moment, and that is embarrassment. The sheer embarrassment that this man was able to roam the world as he was, the sheer embarrassment that this man came out of Saudi Arabia and was able to do so much damage, not only to the West, but also to his own Muslim neighbors. And, of course, the embarrassment that comes especially on the people of Pakistan, that here was a man who was located just a few yards, just less than a mile away from one of the most prestigious military emplacements in all of Pakistan. Now, in a story like this, there are, of course, all kinds of after stories, and there are subsequent considerations. The moral considerations that have certainly been swirling about the entire story of Osama bin Laden, well, those are now coming in kind of newly contextualized forms. This is what you expect in the aftermath of an event such as this. People will come back and ask questions such as, was this aspect fully justified? Could it have been done otherwise? Well, we've been at this a long time. As Christians, considering the use of lethal force, most of the conversations I have had with the media have been surrounding the basic question of whether or not Christians can support the use of lethal force. And the reality is that that's why we have just war theory. That's why we have centuries of Christian reasoning going all the way back to the earliest experiences of the church, where one of the first questions, after all, was whether a Christian can faithfully serve in Caesar's army. That's where we need to have not only a Genesis 3 worldview always in mind that underlines the fact that we live in a sinful world where human sinfulness is going to work its way out in acts of violence that have to be curtailed, and in a world in which sin is going to take place that requires the administration of human justice, we also need to remember that we live in a Romans 13 world. As Christians, we must always be mindful of the fact that God has established by his own sovereign authority that there is to be human government. And these human governments are invested with the responsibility to protect the innocent, to uphold necessary order, to execute laws. We are told that the government does not hold the sword in vain. That comes from the Apostle Paul, as inspired by the Holy Spirit. And with that in mind, we need to understand that even though human beings, as frail, fragile, and always sinful, will always fall short of the glory of God in all that we do, and thus there is no perfect operation, military or otherwise, in a fallen world, we have to do the best we can do, rightly authorized by the legitimate authority, in this case the government, with the motivation to protect the innocent. And after all, what we're talking about with Osama bin Laden is the satisfaction that should come not even primarily because of what he has done, but because of what he now cannot do. The protection of the innocent in acts of military defense, those are most important in terms of the rationalization and justification of military and lethal force. But we also need to remember that there was a very surgical operation undertaken here that was designed to prevent the innocent noncombatants from being wounded or harmed. And in an almost miraculous way, that worked. So when you start looking at this from the perspective of just war theory, it was defensive. It was limited. It was the last resort. All other means to curtail and confine Osama bin Laden having failed. And it was undertaken by a legitimate authority. And in the views of almost all reasonable people of the world, it was a necessary thing. We could say it was a necessary evil in order to remove another evil, in order to limit evil in a fallen world. Even in the midst of something like this, you know, there are aspects of the story that come around to surprise us and to humanize the story. One of the great questions about this, of course, is how in the world Osama bin Laden was able to encapsulate himself in this mansion and compound so close to so many Pakistanis, and indeed so close to the Pakistani military command. How could this happen? Well, it only happened because of a conspiracy of silence. There undoubtedly were some who knew. It's impossible that such a compound could be sustained without someone knowing what was going on. And there's going to be a whole lot of information that is probably going to come to us in coming months and years as to how that actually took place. But there's also a conspiracy of silence where people not only in that part of the world, but let's face it, in our part of the world as well, will look the other way, even when something suspicious is going on. There is a fascinating story that came in the international edition of the New York Times, and it was published yesterday, about what happened, for instance, when children playing in the neighborhood threw a ball that went over the wall of this compound. Let me just read to you from the story. It does humanize something about what it was like to live around this compound. When children playing in the fields let a ball fly into the compound by mistake, the owners never let them retrieve it, but gave them 50 rupees to buy a new one, said one of the neighbors, a woman with a small boy on her hip, who gave her name only as Bibi. Now get this. When the children began to throw balls into the compound on purpose in order to get more money, the owners kept paying, she said, laughing. Well, that's just about how you can figure children would be just about anywhere in the world. If they're going to get 50 rupees, which is far more than the value of a ball, then they'll keep throwing the ball over the fence. Someone had to wonder, what are people hiding there that would lead them to keep paying for balls? Well, then again, maybe you don't really want to know if, after all, it's working so much in your favor. In terms of the world picture, another major event that took place yesterday was the report that the Turkish Prime Minister Recep Erdogan has called for the removal of Muammar Gaddafi. Now, what makes that particularly significant is that Turkey and Libya have had longstanding relationships, and Turkey, after all, is one of the major Muslim powers in the world. And what you have with the Erdogan call for the removal of Muammar Gaddafi is a significant break between Gaddafi and other Muslim and Arab leaders. In this case, Turkey is not Arab, but it is Muslim, and it is very influential. On Tuesday, Mr. Erdogan drew a line saying during a televised news conference that Colonel Gaddafi had violated his role, he had violently resisted calls for change, and that he must leave power for the good of his country and for the good of his people. Well, will that make a difference? We will see. But what often happens in a showdown like this is that there is a crack in the political support that quickly leads to a cleavage and eventually to a collapse. We can only hope in this case that the action undertaken by the Prime Minister of Turkey will lead to further action, because after all, countries like Libya also do not exist on their own. They require support from without. No country is an island unto itself, and Muammar Gaddafi cannot remain in power if he is cut off by his neighbors who had been his friends. In the United States of America, we continue to watch with amazement and concern as floodwaters rise and the rains continue to fall. Across much of the Southland, Alabama, Mississippi, and into Georgia, the aftermath of the tornadoes in recent days continues to be a major preoccupation, as after all, these states, especially Alabama, can hardly find their way into the future without digging through the debris of the past. As lives are being put together, and now as families are grieving in a very intense way, as funeral services and memorial services are now ongoing. But there's another terror here that needs to be commented upon in terms of our concern and prayer. And that is the unknown. There are still many, many people missing. In Tuscaloosa, just one community in Alabama, there had been as many as 400 persons missing. That's now down to about 80, and that is a significant reduction. But that means that right now, approximately 80 human beings are absolutely unaccounted for, and they are loved and missed by their family and friends and loved ones, and it is an agonizing thing. We have to pray not only for families that are grieving the loss of their loved ones, not only for families that have lost everything and communities destroyed, but we need to pray for those who are living in almost the worst possible situation in which they simply do not know. As one grandmother said, speaking of her daughter and grandchildren, it seems impossible that they could have been swept entirely from the face of the earth. Of course, in other parts of the country, as the floodwaters are rising in the Ohio and Mississippi River valleys, there are communities that are threatened with being washed away not by wind and tornado, but by giant walls of water. And, of course, the town of Cary, Illinois, apparently was saved, even as a massive section of a levee system was opened up by the Corps of Engineers and farmland was flooded. But this farmland is owned by people who, after all, had invested their lives in its sustenance and in its crops and in its work. They had tilled the soil, and farmers develop a very personal relationship with that soil. And thus, we need to also recognize many who are brokenhearted now to see their crops and, in many cases, their livestock destroyed, homes and barns and everything swept away. We're talking about multiple thousands of acres that are underwater. And even though over time that replenishes the earth in terms of flood systems and the nutrients in the soil, it will be generations before many of these lives are put back together. That, from a Christian perspective, raises something that we often do not articulate, and that is the problem of disproportionate harm. When something like this takes place, when there is disaster like this, one house can be left standing and the next one completely destroyed. Or in the case of something like wildfires and mudslides, in order to save one house, you might have to let another one go. In the case of Cary, Illinois, well, a town was saved by flooding thousands and thousands of acres of land owned by farmers and ranchers and others. Disproportionate harm is a very horrifying reality in a fallen world. It's one thing to talk about properties, another thing to talk about life. But disproportionate harm is yet another way of affirming that we live in a fallen world in which even when we try to rescue, we can't rescue, we can't rebuild, we can't save, we can't preserve what we would just on a basis to save everyone. At times, there are limitations and hard choices that mean that some are going to bear disproportionate harm and injury compared to others. That's where we can't let the question end there. And there's a good and fruitful conversation going on with folks observing what is going on now in the Ohio and Mississippi River valleys. Those who were preserved need to help those who were destroyed. Disproportionate harm may happen when a tornado destroys this house and leaves the other one standing, but when it comes to human decisions, we also need to take human responsibility. Nashville, Tennessee suffered great floods about a year ago. And there are reports now coming out of Nashville of what it looks like a year after that kind of flooding. And the reality is that it still takes a massive rebuilding project, and it's something that takes a great deal of time. So even as a time does heal many wounds, it often takes a great deal of time looking to the future. Interesting stories coming out about the national news networks. New anchors being named for the CBS Evening News and the Big Three taking on a new complexion. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that even as television is being eclipsed, and just yesterday we talked about the fact that 1.2 million American homes, fewer homes, have televisions than just a few years ago, television is still a potent force. Get this. Large numbers of people still tune in to the Big Three television network news. An average of 23.2 million people have watched the evening news broadcasts of NBC, ABC, or CBS each evening this TV season through the end of April, according to Nielsen. But that's 21% down from where it was just a decade ago. And the demographic that matters here is one of age. The aging viewership of the TV network news in terms of the three big networks is the sign that this is not the thing that is coming, but the thing that is passing. But let's face it, if you're talking about 23.2 million people listening every night, that's still a huge audience. So even as we talk about the changes coming by new media, well, old media isn't just passing away. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.